And yeah, it's better if it's warm. Like, yeah, you don't have to shit out as much congealed grease.
We went down the rivers, we crossed the plains, over the mountains, we forded streams. We went west. We trapped, we mined, we carved our names. With guns and axes, we sought our fame. Our destiny was manifest. And God helped those who stood in the way of business, progress. And the USA.
USA.
Some dickhead came into the bar Thursday wearing a fucking lab coat, and I was like, no. Fuck out of here with that shit.
Oh, man, did you have to fight him?
Almost, I didn't have my lab coat on that time.
Well, you got to have some test tubes full of acid in your lab coat that you can initially just huck into his eyes.
His lab coat was not as good as mine. It didn't have a Danger 5 mission patch on it. It was very clean. He had it buttoned up, and he was wearing a fucking shirt, collared shirt and a tie.
He's like some poser scientist.
Yeah, fake ass.
Jesus Christ. Get it together,
man. A not mad scientist.
Right? Yeah, I mean... corporate ass fucking
corpo
penny loafer ass fucking.
He's probably working on a cure for cancer or some bullshit.
Some
like that.
Fucking lame shit instead of like imbuing the human species with the power of flight.
That's right.
As you should be doing.
The only science I'm into is giving myself cancer slowly.
Weird science. Oh, weird. I'm a champion at that. That's it. Let's breathe some chemicals. Welcome back to How the West Was Fucked.
How the West
Was.
Fuck!
Ah! Did we do that on the first one?
Yeah. Sure. I made sure and did it this time. Well, there's 2 weeks in a row where Tony beat me to the punch, so
yeah.
Being cautious about it.
We are still talking about Doc Maynard, but a lot about him, but also like the folks that he surrounds himself with.
Yeah, which interesting is just, characters. At that time, was just called the People of Seattle.
People of Seattle.
Weirdos. The people in your neighborhood.
Well, they've been replaced with...
new weirdos.
Yeah, well, the weirdos are kind of getting... priced out now. It's just lame ass.
That's true. There's less like actual character weirdos.
Well, it's
like I had talked about before on the show. Like the fucking Burger King burned down, so like the king is gone. He doesn't live in the same neighborhood
right.
anymore.
Yeah, there's nothing anchoring that Eldritch like goes to the you know once the
oh right.
It's
yeah.
like Skyrim. You destroy the temple, and then the ghosts disappear.
The ghosts are free to like roam, whatever, move on to the other side. Yeah. So I'm sure the king finally, like, when the Burger King burned down, he's like, well, time to go work at Microsoft. Well, so now he lives in Redmond.
You know, he's finally able to join his long-lost love, separated by a curse, the red-haired maiden with the long pigtails. Right. Yeah, right. He had to fight an evil clown in a yellow jumpsuit, too. with his weird purple henchman.
And the overseer of the slave army, Colonel Sanders.
I thought that's where you were probably going with that, but yeah, fuck.
No, it's kind of funny. We did have, so there's Wendy's on my side of the Rainier, and then there was Burger King like a block down from it.
Yep.
And you go across the street from Burger King, and there's McDonald's.
Yep.
And then there's the 24-hour Subway. We had just the fucking best, absolute.
Well, and your Subway has that lovely like bulletproof glass between you and the
sandwich artist.
Yeah. Yep. And then the McDonald's.
Usually you just use the bread for bulletproofing.
Yeah.
You can't see through it, unfortunately.
I mean, do you really want to see what's on the other side? Like. I don't know. I like to eat at the Lowe's.
Actually, their little burger wagon thing is fucking pretty good.
Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised the first time I had that.
And where I actually really like to eat is the fucking Philly cheesesteak place adjacent, but they're not open on Sundays because...
Jesus and shit.
They don't like capitalism as much as you should,
I guess.
Oh,
what about the fish place a little further down? That's
fish place is okay.
Oh, that way? Yeah, mm-hmm. Emerald City Fish and Chips mm-hmm. is fucking bomb.
I went in there on happenstance on like literally their first day open.
Oh,
and
really?
Actually, they didn't have like half the menu they didn't have yet, but it was like it's coming. But
yeah. The owner guy, if he's there, he's like, oh, what's up, man? Like he knows me. He knows exactly. Like he'll see me park my car and I'll come in. It's already rung up.
Nice.
Like, already ready to go.
That's what
Let's
I
go
like.
There right now.
I'm down. No, I'm just gonna finish this other half a bowl of chili. While Will enlightens
you
us.
You forgot
with
your
his,
own fucking lines. Ha ha.
With this NPR voice.
I'm just going to stall for time while I desperately scramble for the shit I've said 300 times in a row.
NPR voice, Comic Sans.
Speaking of fish and chips.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So the doc tried to fish salmon or fish the ship the fish The salmon fish.
Ship the fish.
To San Fran.
You filthy fish shipper.
Yeah. San Francisco.
But I'm sure he was catching those all with his own hands and not in involving the natives that
were
already. Yeah.
What a dumbass, right? But HBC had been doing it for 20 years.
Oh.
Elsewhere.
But they had a secret weapon, which was called actually preserving the fucking fish.
Yeah, right.
But the doc was away, and he had somebody else salt it and ship it off. That's why it went bad.
Oh, well, that, the guy was probably pocketing that good old salt money and like, oh, yeah, sure, I salted it. And then he's actually just selling salt under the table to the nearest other meat person.
But basically, he makes all his money back on wood anyway.
Yeah, right. Fucking salt gangsters.
So the doc is responsible for bringing Yesler to town and his mill. Yeah. More importantly, the mill.
I was going to say, that's a mixed bag.
Goddamn,
yeah. The mill was all right.
Well, it gave people jobs, but Yesler didn't put any money back into town or didn't even pay most of his fines or legal fees or taxes or whatnot.
Well, and he also built his fucking headquarters at that like restaurant, more or less, and everybody, that was like City Hall. Or no, wait, the restaurant was somebody else's, but all the mill workers hung out there, but it was also City Hall, but then he like closed it down and then everybody had to go to his mill or something.
Something like that. Anyway, Doc wanted it here just to deny it for going to San Francisco or elsewhere. Otherwise, they wouldn't be making any money off the lumber.
Yeah. Oh, the mill. You mean Yesler's mill. Okay.
And it was a steam mill. And that way you can actually cut boards that are halfway straight.
Or what did they run on before that? Fucking magic?
Yep.
No, I'm going to recycle a joke I used. I guarantee I used the last time we did this. How do you cut the steam? Like, how small do you, how thin can you cut the steam? Okay. Get it out of the...
But if you have a good mill, then you can actually, you know, build ships and other things with it too.
Well, you can have a 2x4 that resembles a 2x4 and not a janky ass piece of not on wood.
But Doc was kind of the victim in Denny's retelling of this. It's like, oh, I give away these free lots to Yesler, but it's like, well, the town wouldn't have existed without Yesler's mill.
Yeah.
And Doc
says the guy, oh, my cabin doesn't have a roof. If only there was a sawmill, like fucking douchebag.
So Doc gave Yesler 10 of his own lots, but persuaded Bourne, the brother or Denny's brother-in-law, give 3 times that much. And Charlie Terry offered the whole town of New York, which is West Seattle, Alki.
New York, Alki.
Yesler could have had whatever he wanted in Olympia or Stelcom or Port Townsend or Bellingham.
Wow, that's a wide variety of
Doc ropes him in here. It only took a month for Doc to set up the town, and it looked good for him. And he only gave up only, you know, 10 lots out of his 648
acres. Actually, it was pretty strategically located in a place that was good for a mill and not really much else.
All right.
And it got everybody excited about this new town.
We get to see boards cut in an organized fashion.
So it's looking up, and then Doc realizes Yesler was a piece of shit, and he'll be a headache for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
But Yesler didn't know anything about running a mill, because he was just a carpenter. He knew he saw put boards together, not make boards.
I see, right. I see.
But it was his partner, John Strobel, that put up most of the money and knew all about it. And, of course, Yesler didn't pay him back, and then Strobel had to come all the way
Yesler
out
didn't
from
pay,
here.
He fucking Donald Trumped everybody.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, he would not pay anybody
this
back.
This is a guy that, like, I think sued him to the point where he's, I'm going to take your fucking mill.
Right.
You know.
Oh, this is the guy, because I know he paid a couple people back, but they had to sue his ass.
Right.
And had to be in court for, like, months.
He only paid, like, you know, half of it back
or
a third or something.
Yeah.
But it took Yesler 5 months to get this mill going, even though most were running in a few weeks. And the paper writes, Yesler has disappointed us in nearly everything.
Ha ha! Take that, you dead fuck. I don't know why I want to shit on Henry Yesler so bad impulsively, but man.
Didn't he hang a bunch of teenagers or some shit?
No,
he invited everybody to come hang in his yard.
At the mill, I thought.
It was in front of his house, which wasn't far from the mill.
But, like, isn't the only quote ever in a newspaper from him about the hanging? Like, that's a damn fine orchard of corpses or whatever the fuck.
Yep. Yeah, that was his only joke he ever told, too.
Hardy har har, you fucking sack of shit.
Duck also did his homework, too. Before settling on Elliott Bay, he found out about all the rivers, and Snoqualmie Pass was the closest to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Elliott Bay was the closest to it, but if you would have followed the river, you would end up in Everett.
Right, which nobody wants to go to fucking
Nobody wants that.
Nope.
Unless you're playing a show at Tony V's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even then.
Or you're
even
in the fucking Navy.
And, of course, Everett's named after Monte Cristo.
Who's named after the sandwich.
Yep. And
Everett Monte Cristo?
Well, Everett was the son of one of the investors, Colby. And Colby
which is a fine
like,
cheese to use in a Monte Cristo
yep.
sandwich.
And Colby was like, oh, look at my fat son eat. This is just like this new town we're trying to start.
What?
So Seattle was started by with a dude that had a mukbang fucking Instagram video.
Like, yeah, the kid, Instagram the pie-eating barf kid from Stand By yeah. Me and fucking...
You guys ever go down the mukbang rabbit hole?
No.
It's a fucking South...
What?
It's a South Korean, like, thing.
I say, it sounds vaguely dirty.
I mean, it's one of those things on the internet that's not sexual.
But you can just...
But it's...
You can hear thousands of people jerking off to it
at the
somewhere
same time.
Through the...
It is
through the wind of the internet. Yeah.
Fucking insane. It's these videos on like YouTube or Instagram or what's the other one? TikTok, where it's you.
What about X?
Almost
what about X, Tony?
Almost always, really fucking hot chicks.
Uh huh.
Loudly eating a ton of fucking food.
You know, I think I have run into that in the wild. I didn't know it had a category.
It's a whole thing.
Nor
dude.
A name.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. It's a sub genre of ASMR, I'm pretty sure.
Huh. Okay.
Thanks for
you're
letting
welcome.
Us know that.
It's up there with the Breadface blog. So it's just a lady that posts videos of herself, like really pretty lady that posts videos of herself, like rolling her face in different kinds of bread.
I think I want to move to the woods and live in a tree.
And marry a Sasquatch.
Not have to hear shit like that ever again.
Lafayette Bulk, or Bulch, was competing.
Bulk's great-great-grandmother?
Right. Yep. He was competing with Doc to bring people to Stelcom and offered them free lots if they would just take his route through Natchez Pass.
Please, for the love of God, come to Stelcom.
I will give you land.
They're still pretty much trying to do that.
And, of course, the Natchez Pass is closed during the winter even now.
Right.
And, of course, we get our real asshole, First Governor Isaac Stevens. He also gets appointed to survey the Transcontinental Railroad to the Sound, which didn't quite happen.
No.
He has George McClellan, Little Mac, who is an Army buddy, to survey the pass over the Cascades.
Is that the designer of the McClellan saddle?
Maybe, but Little Mac is more famous in the Civil War for not. The major general of the Potomac. But wouldn't go out and attack anybody. And then Lincoln, after a couple of years, is like, you got to go. Because basically he was friends with all the South.
Oh, he was just kind of like...
Yeah, wasn't he...
Doing a half-assed job
so
at it.
So is there's this fucking street right here that goes
McClellan,
up the hill? Is that named
Forrest,
after him?
Yeah. And
no
there's
fucking
Forrest
way.
Probably after...
Nathan Bedford
well,
Forrest.
Like you said, the motherfucking...
No fucking
the
way.
Motherfucking
and there's Stevens is one of
because I was talking to
too.
some old-timer, and there, I told him, you know, we were talking about where I live, and I was like, oh, yeah, McClellan. She's like, oh, God, fuck that guy. I was like, what? Racist piece of shit.
Well,
like,
I love
oh,
that
okay.
It intersects with MLK.
Yeah, no shit, huh?
Not evilly designed in any way, shape, or form.
Yep, and across from Mount Si in North Bend is McClellan Ridge.
Well, I said the McClellan saddle is the calf saddle, like the you know the one with no saddle horn and it's kind of like got a split in the middle and
maybe we'll have to look it up.
Wait, also you're calling him Little Mac? Is that actually what one of his nicknames was?
Yeah, because he was a short guy too.
Oh fuck yeah! So he also was they named a character in fucking Mike Tyson's Punch Out.
Right, right.
The player character. Lil Mac.
Right.
And, of course, since he's friends with all these Southern people, and this is right before the war, and with friends with Secretary of War Jeff Davis, they don't want this transcontinental railroad going through the North. So, basically, this Lil Mac is fighting with Stevens the whole way, and, you know, they're kind of playing each other off each other. When the Civil War started, Lil Mac got command of the biggest army of the Potomac and squandered it, never attacking, and fights with Lincoln, who finally had to fire him. And he actually runs against Lincoln during the second term in 1864.
How'd that go for you?
Yeah, not good. It was said about Stevens, quote, to know him was to hate him.
Wow, sounds like a real peach.
His former secretary, Elwood Evans, called him, quote, a tiny bandy-legged tyrant.
So it's fucking Ted Cruz?
He's got chicken legs.
Chicken legs.
I guess I've never seen Ted Cruz in shorts, nor do I desire to do so, but.
I just assume that he has little chicken feet, yeah.
Well, it's good because...
It would be better if, yeah, there was actual, like, three-toed bird feet.
Well, we get this description because he never wanted to be photographed in full because then people realize how short he was. So he had chicken legs. That's what we're going with.
We're just
going
to go with that because he never took pictures. Okay, yep. Cool.
But he is 5'3 with his...
Oh!
That included his tall hair and high heels. So basically, he's about the same size as Madame Downbull, but not as
girthy.
Yep. Hey, Jinx.
Buy me a Coke.
So Stevens would get in a fight with everybody, especially governors, senators, judges, and lots of Indians.
You said everybody, so you don't have to list everybody.
Just imagine, like, hey, how's it going, man? Yeah.
Them's fighting words. Yeah. You're a fucking dead man.
The only
What? Your mother fucking sucks oysters out of a goat's ass, you piece of shit.
The only guy he couldn't get in a good fight with was Doc, because Doc would win every confrontation without fighting.
Right, he knows his fucking game, and he's like,
you just shoot him with a fucking dart in the neck or something.
Shoots him with kindness.
Oh, okay, cool.
So January 1854, Stevens comes to town, and Doc and all the other guys show him around. They show him up through Renton to the coal mines. And then
check out these sweet fucking coal mines. Mm-hmm. Look at all this misery.
Then up to Snoqualmie Pass, and they kind of show him the obvious way up there.
Probably the way he had to come through to get here in the first fucking place. Or did he sail around? Mm-hmm.
And Doc was keen to impress on him. If the railroad followed the river all the way down, it'd go to Everett, and then that's 30 unnecessary miles. And it would cost a lot more, and Elliott Bay is a better, port anyway.
Isn't that Everett's town slogan? 30 unnecessary miles. Yep. Man, I guess Miles City's getting a break this fucking week. Fuck you, Everett.
What was that band? Oh, I forgot the name. But they have a song called Fuck Everett, Fuck Tacoma.
Really?
But it's all noise.
So. Cool. Joey Pistrunk had that I Don't Want to Die in Everett song.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right.
But Governor Stephen trusts Little Mac because he's, I don't know. And he's Little Mac says, Snoqualmie was too snowy. But, of course, Stephen's passes.
He's just being influenced by the name in a language he couldn't understand. Mm-hmm. Oh, it has snow even in the title.
Yep. So Stephen's sent his man Tinkham to go check it out. There's a Tinkham Road.
Tinkham fucking road.
Oh, yeah. I know Tinkham Road.
The doc asked Seattle to send some of his men to meet him and guide him into Elliott Bay. And, of course, it's unknown to Doc and Stevens, but Little Mac was in the area the same day, and they both managed to miss each other and not find the pass.
Oh.
Wow.
I mean, you kind of just go east, man.
But, actually, Tinkin was coming from eastern Washington over Snoqualmie Pass, and he said it's actually a good way to get
it. It's easier to find from the dry side with no trees.
So Little Mac spends New Year's Day with Pat Canham in the mouth of the Snohomish. Little Mac tells Pat Canham that the Great White Father paid him to find the pass on the Snoqualmie and also paid him not to find it. So basically, let's take our time and milk the government.
Oh.
Oh, I see. The longer it takes, the more money you're going to make.
Yep.
Got it. Also pays more not to find it.
Also, I'm telling you this. I'm not going to pay you a fucking thing.
Yeah, right.
But I'm telling you this.
Well, he's going to pay Pat Canham a little bit, but, you know.
What year was this? Who was the Great White Father at this point?
1854. Link. Buchanan-ish?
We talked about Lincoln later with Little Mac. Okay.
So it would have been after, what's his name? James K. Polk. Who had the dignity to die shortly after. Anyway, so they take their time, and it did snow at the falls, so Pat Canham takes credit for that. I made it snow.
Okay.
Just like Santa Claus.
And, of course, Christmas he charges them more money. And, of course, Little Mac just charges the government. So it took 9 days to get from Everett to the falls.
Well, yeah, because it's not in a straight line.
No, nope. And then it takes 2 days to get back when they are cold and wet and hungry.
Got to get back to Madame Damnable's and get some clam chowder, if you know what I mean.
That's right.
But Tinkham's...
Chlamydia chowder?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Milky.
Ivor.
That's my porn star name.
What? Chlamydia chowder?
Eat your chili. At least that comes out of the other end.
Yeah.
But Tinkham, Doc gets his report, and then Doc leaks that to the press. So for 20 years, people talked to getting a railroad to Seattle because it only takes 20 years to get this done. Mm-hmm. And that's only three.
That's much like any public works project we still have.
Yeah.
Shit, the railroad just made it to motherfucking, Renton? Like, they got the light rail goes to Renton now, I think.
Did they open it?
Like last week.
Oh, shit.
We still can't get from Seattle to Bellevue until a year or two from now.
Yeah. I didn't realize the south leg of it fucking finally turned on.
I think it goes from Bellevue to Renton, not from Seattle.
Oh.
But they got to now build the one that links the Bellevue to
Right, cross
Seattle.
I-90.
Right. Oh. You know, the probably the more useful
The one that's going to get used. Yeah.
We're right at about what the rail system was about in 1900.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Before they tore it out. Except for the trains smell worse and you're more likely to get shot on them now.
Same amount of fentanyl, though.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yep. Anyway, so 3 months after Doc dies, that's when Tacoma is chosen as the terminus in 1873. But of course, it takes a while for that Great Northern get built because...
Civil fucking war?
Of the Sioux.
Oh, I missed the year.
Because, because they have to go through Bismarck. It stops at Bismarck for quite a while.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because it was...
Well, then it made it to market collapse too.
Well, then it made it, made it to Bismarck, and then eventually across the Missouri, and then stopped in Medora for a minute. And then the Marquis had to, at least that branch line, I guess it's not the, whatever.
But of course, all these visiting dignitaries would spend the night at Madame Damnable's.
I have to, baby. It's the only hotel in town. Yeah,
yeah. But she didn't like giving up free room for Little Mac because it would cut into her profits. So she goes to share her thoughts with Doc and curse him out. So this is the only recorded violence done by Doc. And
he puts
Madame Damnable over his leg and paddles
her. Shut the fuck up.
I mean, I'm going to go to the bathroom.
Shut up.
So Madame Damnable takes Doc to court. But of course, they fine for Doc because he's pulling all the strings.
Yeah.
Yep. She appealed to the circuit judge when it was all held in her own establishment. Still, they found for Doc. And she got charged for court costs and lawyer fees.
Oh, man.
And after that, she behaves. So Doc and Chief Seattle gets the first gathering of Indians together for Stevens to talk to him at Medicine Creek.
I say, Will just pointed at something.
I've got this red vest from the early 80s, late 70s, maybe. It's got a Rainier patch on it.
That's the second one.
Okay, but there's a giant, huge patch that I think they shellacked it or something. It's very hard. But it says Nisqually Medicine Creek Treaty 1983 All-Star, and there's a dude, there's a giant man with a basketball about to step on a tiny person in a
canoe while a salmon jumps into his other outstretched hand.
Yep, and there's an eagle trying to get the fuck out of there.
Well, you got to have the eagle.
Can't not.
There should be a unicorn underneath.
It's probably only 10 years after they were shooting at the Nisqually for fishing.
Yeah.
They still do that from fucking time to time.
Yep.
Anyway, so they get this first gathering together at Doc's store, actually. So this is the supposed site of the supposed speech by Chief Seattle, the famous one, which was written down by Doc Smith 25 years after the fact.
Right.
And it was spoken in English, which... Chief Seattle didn't speak.
And doesn't he bring up shit like buffalo and shit? Mm-hmm. He probably has never seen one. Or,
but he did speak there for about 30 minutes in his big booming voice. And one hand raised, on the other hand was he was resting on Governor Stevens' head because he was so short.
That's a baller move. That's a power move right there.
Yep. So Stevens really didn't like Indians after this. So the day after Christmas, 1854, Stevens has the second meeting at Medicine Creek. Hazard Stevens, his son, who was the first with the climb Rainier.
That's going in the baby book.
Baller-ass fucking name right
there. Hazard has to come back into style.
Yep, he says the Indians were eager to listen to the new white chief.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend Judge James Wickersham from the Exploring the Olympics episode, he later said, quote, the treaties were obtained through over-persuasion, deceit, promise, not on the record, contracts obtained by the strong from the child.
Basically, the Indians got ripped off.
Yep.
Okay. When they say from the child, they're talking about
the Indians are the child.
Yep.
Like the Duwamish and Salish and
His chief interpreter George Gibbs said Stevens was often drunk and then at the same time lectured the Indians about drinking.
You're not drinking enough. You need to drink more.
Yeah. See, it's I know you people can't really handle this because you're involved with it, but. Who get good at it like me, sometimes you can have a government job too.
Stupid fucking white man.
Chief factor at the HBC at Fort Nisqually was Dr. William Tolmie. He tells Stevens, get Chief Lesheye on your side. He's smart. And be a good start if you got him on your side. Spoiler alert, he doesn't.
That's, once again, a listener you ran into, today, Mary, her family's Fort Nisqually.
Oh.
People's from there. So if we ever do one on that, we have a resource.
Alrighty. So this Medicine Creek Treaty gives the Nisqually the lands they didn't want, but they actually do make out better, but only after a war.
I do like the, we're giving you this stuff, Here, here's a 76 Buick that doesn't run.
Yeah.
And just drop it in your yard.
Hey, and look at that. It has a trunk full of dog shit. Hey,
No, I'm good, man. No, I insist. It's yours.
Well, I think they gave him basically what is now Tacoma, and they wanted, of course, what is now Fort Lewis, because Leshi had a bunch of horses. And he's like, hey, let's keep these prairies. And, of course, they get less of their land through Fort Lewis. It's like, we're going to move you because we're going to be dropping bombs.
Yeah, I was going to say, we need to shoot artillery at something.
Tale as old as time.
Yep. So Congress actually ratifies this Medicine Creek Treaty because it was a ripoff in 3 months. It took 4 years to ratify all the other ones. And of course, and Stephen said when Leshi argued about, you know, keeping his prairies, and Stephen said, "You'll take this land and like it." Mm. So Leshi threw away his chief paper and said, "I'd rather fight and take it."
Hell yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's like, how about instead I go back to the old house there, get out my fucking war club, and put it directly up your ass.
So next year after the Battle of Seattle, January 22nd, 1855 at Point Elliott, which is Mukilteo, Stevens got the Indians to sign the big treaty, which was 5 million acres of land to go to Whitey, which is most of Washington. Basically, it's what we have today. And, of course, Chief Seattle is helping Doc out, getting all these people in. So
yep,
that's how you get stuff named after you. You kind of have to work with Whitey, right? Yeah. Sad to say. Chief Seattle asked Stevens for a separate treaty for his allied tribes because they didn't go to war. But the Indians that got 40,000 acres now got 4,000.
Mm. Oh, shit. We made a calculating error. You got to remove one of those zeros from that.
So the federal government paid the Indians 3 cents an acre for Seattle, for the city. Basically turned around and gave it to Doc for free.
That's what I should start fucking offering up as my fucking rent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 3 cents. I'm on less than an acre, so you're making out like a bandit.
Yeah, yep, man.
So Doc basically gets this for free, and then he sells it for $290 an acre. That's pretty good profit.
Fuck, yeah, man.
So by 1853, Doc had sold 87 lots. But and then the next year dropped to 15, and then the year after that, because of zero, because of all the violence, which really didn't happen. But
right.
Were they the third of that?
Were they big lots?
Yeah. There's actually very few of those left.
I know. I kind of used to love those stores.
It's always weird. Like, that's a screaming deal on some chocolate-covered pretzels. Oh, why is the bag already open?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's like,
here's a couch. Oh, why is it missing an arm?
It's like if if Target was a Ross. You know what I mean?
It's like if Target was a Ross, and then people lived in there after the store closed that night and used all the shit, and then they went back on sale in the morning.
So the government told Stevens to, quote-unquote, endeavor to bring in all the tribes into one big reservation. Right.
Which was, I think, on Bainbridge at that point.
Yeah, so Stevens took this literally. Basically,
I will endeavor. I'm going to endeavor so fucking hard.
So the big mistake that he made was telling the Upper Duwamish to move to the Tulalip Reservation with Pat Canem, their mortal enemies. And Pat Canem's basically terrorizing.
Hey, you're all the same, right? You're going to really like hanging out with your historical enemies of hundreds of years in the past. Like.
Just ask a few questions before you start pulling fucking moves, dude.
Right? Yep. They all look the same. Let's just fucking
move.
Yeah,
right.
And the government told Stevens, just, you know, do this around settlements. You don't have to go out in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Because they're not hampering business or anything. So just...
And make nice with those people. So the treaties with Indians around the settlements were in order. And, of course, the order to get all the Indians on one reservation was merely a suggestion.
More like guidelines, really.
Right.
Of course, Stevens wants to make a name for himself. A few days after the Point Elliott Treaty, he signed a treaty at Point No Point, which is a good point.
I've always loved that fucking point.
Mm-hmm. It's got a lighthouse that's probably, 10 feet tall?
Between Point No Point and Obstruction Pass, those are two of the best fucking place names in Washington State.
Well, not far from there.
And Deception Pass also.
Well, Deception Pass is fine. Pass can be deceiving. I like the fact that it's a pass, but it's obstructed, so is it really a pass?
Yeah, that's true. It's a paradox pass.
I think there somewhere around there's Polar Be Damned Point or something.
What?
Like we're going to the North Pole or...
Pole.
Pull?
Pull or be damned.
Pull, like...
Oh, pull.
Row or you're going to be sucked out into the big water.
It's like, here they be monsters in the form of a natural bath drain.
So Stevens goes up and signs with the Clallams and the Macaws, which are nowhere near the settlements. Basically, the only town up there is Port Townsend. And he definitely oversteps the suggestions by signing a treaty with the Quileutes on the coast.
Right.
Because there's no forks back then either.
Yeah, no forks, no Lapush.
Yeah, they all had to use chopsticks.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we get a repeat offender, Johnny Wool, General Johnny Wool.
Not Johnny Smoke?
Nope.
Nope.
He's the Pacific Army commander, so this is after the Mexican-American War, after, what's his name, Sam Chamberlain?
Yep.
And he is in town. He says the whole of eastern Washington should be declared off limits to Whitey till the tribes could be brought under military control.
Oh, I was with him until the until the caveat.
Like, I was like, wow, progressive. Nope, never mind.
Wait, yep.
Well, Steven said, let's get it under military control.
Yeah, his thing is like, it's too fucking dangerous for white people. Mm-hmm. So get these people under your thumb and then, oh, dick.
Yeah, and if people who don't know, that side of the state without irrigation is not... Arable. Not anything that you need, especially at 1850.
It's
just sitting there dry humping the Rocky Mountains, waiting for snow.
I got a free car from there one time. It was like buddy's grandpa.
Did it come equipped with white supremacy? Because generally what...
It was a 79 or 80 Mustang, and it was like the four-cylinder fucking...
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't like the fastback.
The square headlight
And it had the fucking... it had a trunk instead of like a...
You bet,
Did it have... fucking ugliest fucking car I've ever owned in my life. And I've owned some ugly fucking pieces of shit. But the whole front clip was plastic, right? Like the whole body shit. And it had sat in eastern Washington for like probably 10 years without getting driven at all.
Squirrels jerking off on it.
And like it had like spent so many hot summers there that all the plastic had like seeped out all the oil that was in it. And now it's just rubber. Like you could grab the front of it and pull on it and it would just go like flex and shit.
Adobe, the little car.
Dude, that car sucks so bad.
You can just like sit your beer down on the bumper and use it as a koozie. Uh-huh. Like, just shove
pretty
it
much.
In.
Wow.
And dude, that thing you'd go, I think I told you about this before, but you drive like maybe about 100 miles and then the number one spark plug would work its way out, and it would go. You'd have to pull over and shut it down. Put on your fucking barbecue gloves, and then like screw that thing back in. So it'd be good for like another 100 miles. It was free. And then I sold it to somebody for $100, and that was all my walking around money from when we went on tour in Hawaii.
Nice.
So I was in Hawaii for like 9 days, and I had $100 to my name.
Back when you could do things like that,
yeah.
$100 won't get you
jack shit.
I mean,
back then, all it got me was like, we got free drinks when we play, so I didn't have to worry about that.
Right.
And then, like, I would eat just like Spam Musubi and Kona coffee from the ABC Marts.
That sounds fucking great.
Fabulous.
I am not adverse to that, but No, I just remember when, I could, like, wow, I have like $1,500 for the entire month. Okay, I paid my rent. Now I'm going to drive to Texas.
Fuck
around.
Yeah,
you know, totally. Like.
Anyway.
Back in my day. Yes.
Stevens had already pissed off Wool. Wool was already old. He was in his 70s by the 1850s. He was sitting there kind of...
Which is 150 in today's years.
Right. Yeah.
So they're sitting around drinking, and Wool says he won the Battle of Buena Vista, which we covered.
Yep.
And the other guys go along with it, but Stevens stands up and corrects him that Zach Taylor won that battle.
Oh, shit.
And Wool didn't even go to West Point.
Yeah, nerd.
But this guy had already served in the War of 1812 in the Mexican-American War, and he goes on to serve in the Civil War, too.
Oh, Jesus. Yep. Wow, that's a...
Lieutenant Dan shit.
So Stevens and his teenage hazard go to Walla Walla.
Teenage hazard.
It's like Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Yeah, right.
They go over there to treaty. George Gibbs tried to warn him, the interpreter.
Hey, y'all, you want a treaty?
Mm-hmm.
No, sir, I don't think we do.
Bishop Blanchett warned him, too. He had been in eastern Washington for 10 years, and he told him that the Indian agent there for eastern Washington that Stevens picked, A.J. Bolin, was a bad pick.
Yeah, probably had a little bit to do like later with the Whitman stuff.
Well, this is long after.
After Whitman?
Yeah.
Yeah. Seven years or so.
I don't know. I'm time warping all around.
Yep. So Stephen sets the meeting for May 21st, 1855, and the tribes didn't show up for a week. Then it took a week to sign it.
What, they didn't set an alarm?
It took a week to sign it?
Mm-hmm.
How many people signed it?
Oh, well,
1,500 people?
Whoever you bribe. Yeah.
Sure.
But during the summer, gold was found near Fort Colville.
Oh, no. That's the death sentence.
Yep. Randall McDonald's dad founded Fort Colville.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Colville,
yeah. Up there in the Pondere country out by the Selkirks.
So Stevens was gone for a month, so Charles Mason of Mason County was acting governor in Olympia. Whoop, whoop. So the doxing that Stevens was spending all the money to buy presents for Eastern Washington tribes so they could come in and sign this treaty. So he tells Mason...
I have a six-year-old, so I'm just imagining like,
yeah, like
board games and fucking stuffed animals.
Playmobil guys. And...
So he tells Mason that he should sell, or the government should buy his terminus for the railroad. And Stevens agreed on that before, too. So with that cash that Doc gets from the government, from Mr. Mason, which was $2,400, Doc buys enough goods to keep the local natives happy here while all this is going on and keep them from going to war.
Oh, I see. Okay. So he's...
You bribe the ones that are close to town.
Yes.
And then you prepare to fuck up the ones that aren't.
Yeah. But the ones that are far from town, it's like they're going to wager whether they want to actually come and do this or not.
Right.
It's a fucking long haul. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and that we're kind of rehashing up some from our Chief Seattle episode, too. But at the same time, white miners raped an Indian woman in eastern Washington. So the Indian agent there, A.J. Bolin, went to check it out. And his body was found a few days later.
Oh.
So basically, they, you know, well, we'll get to that. So, yeah, he brings back the guys who he thinks are guilty. And he's like, oh, well, you're going to get in trouble when we get back. And they're like, we're going back, but you're not. So but they basically kill him.
What's this wee shit?
Yeah.
Don't go anywhere. How the West Was Fucked will be right back.
We're fishermen, and we're here to say you gotta eat your seafood every day. Clams and scallops.
Salmon, too.
Prawns and oysters, they're good for you.
We bring them in fresh and that ain't.
Hey, you should have seen the van that got away.
So if you're smart, like we know you are,
you go to Ivor's restaurants and seafood bars.
Then we say Ivor's food is fine.
We ain't just handing you some fishing line. We're the Ivor's crew, and we're here to say you gotta eat your seafood every day.
Holy, 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 it's the water oak that makes it holy beer. It's the water and a lot more.
It's the special care that makes Olympia such a special beer.
So the fight was on after that. Mike Simmons was appointed, Mike Simmons had Doc be the sub-Indian agent. So he gets all the friendly natives to come to West, shipped over to Bainbridge or whatever.
Yep. Well, he got just less than half of them to go.
And so that included Chief Seattle, who built a home, the Old Man, or
the
it was close to Old Man House.
Or Old Man House, yeah. Yep.
Doc wasn't going to put his friend on the Tulalip with Pat Cammon, who probably would have killed him. So Doc went up to Duwamish and east of Lake Washington collecting friendlies so they wouldn't be mistook for the eastern tribes that were, they thought they were going to come and invade.
Yeah. Like the Cayuse and the fucking...
But this also, November 21st, 1855, Yesler blew his whistle to start work on his mill. But none of his cheap Indian laborers showed up because they're all shipped off, so they wouldn't be killed. So basically, November 21st, 4th, he and other business leaders fire off a letter to Mason saying, "We want our Indians back.
Stop this stupid war. Stop this stupid war so I can exploit the native people."
Yeah, right. Jesus Christ.
And Yesler and everybody else said Doc was not to be trusted because he was friends with Chief Seattle, and they want their Duwamish back so they could work. Mason... was a fellow Democrat like Yesler and crew, turned him down and said that Simmons and Doc shouldn't be fucked with. These are the only two guys that know what's going on
here. They actually get shit accomplished. Yep.
So October 28th, 1855, 9 whiteys were killed in the White River Valley. And this is the one that Leschi gets blamed for and later hanged. And you could go see the tree. Well, it's not the real tree, but there's a commemorative one in like a dry cleaners in Lakewood.
A commemorative hanging tree?
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's when...
Why? Is that weird to you?
Yeah, like, feels weird. Feels real weird.
And that's when Governor Stevens is like, because like the local law in Stilicum wouldn't hang him. They're like, oh, we're going to arrest you for not hanging Leschi.
What the fuck?
Even though he had really nothing,
nothing
to do,
with,
to
do
it.
With it. But man, they, but really, he got blamed for everything. They really wanted to hang that guy, though.
And so Stevens, while all this shit was getting stirred up, was on the east side of the Rockies meeting with the Blackfeet. Mason did send some guys to go get him back safe. So they stop, actually, so these guys that are going didn't have any guns, so they stop at Fort Vancouver. And
didn't have any guns?
I guess.
That seems fucking foolhardy.
Yeah.
So they asked General Wool at Fort Vancouver for him.
Hey, you got some guns?
Can we have some guns?
Mm-hmm. Thankfully, he said no, and that Eastern Washington...
Get out of here, kid, you bother me.
Yeah, basically, Eastern Washington was off limits, and Steven stayed away, so we didn't have to deal with that asshole. But one guy does make it to Stevens and explain what had to happen. So he gets back January 19th, 1856, to a 38-gun salute. I don't know why that's
is that normal?
21.
No.
How many guns we got? 39, but one of them's broke.
Yeah,
38.
Enough.
Yeah.
So Stevens addressed the legislature and said, the war will be prosecuted till the last hostile Indian is exterminated.
I've heard that.
No treaties for hostile bands.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they have another 38 guns.
Also, how do we define hostile? Anybody that stands in the way of our business interests or, you know, or occupying land I want.
Mm-hmm. So the doc would write to the governor that the militia couldn't tell who is hostile or not.
And, of course, at this time, Denny and his fucking brother are all, like, wanting to militia the fuck up and be all, we gotta do something about...
So Stevens then talks to the residents of Seattle January 25th and told them, you are no much in danger of an Indian attack as San Francisco or New York.
Right.
What do you think happens the next day?
They get attacked.
They get attacked.
Yep. That's the Battle of Seattle, but...
The one time
they get attacked. Actually happened.
And they're pretty ready. They have that weird log cabin blockhouse thing.
Yep. So, like, the initial story is like, oh, there's 2,000 Indians coming to attack us.
Yep.
More like 12.
Yeah. And then the Decatur fucking shells the piss out of the fucking wood line.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Marines from the Decatur come on shore with all their weaponry and stuff.
Yep.
And,
so the only two casualties for the Whiteys, of course, was the young boy who poked his head out of the blockhouse and got it shot off.
Yes. Well, and then I think later, wasn't there a guy that was digging out a stump and there was an unexploded... Thing.
Yep, that was actually the first banker in town, Dexter Horton.
Yep,
who was warming his ass on a stump while it was burning, and then it exploded.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah, that's
it had
right.
A fucking cannonball in it.
The only other guy was a soldier that got to, went to get a drink of water.
And the water killed him like immediately.
But Horton had to eat his meal standing up for the next couple of weeks after getting a shell in the ass.
Wait, no, he didn't he die from that or
no?
Did he?
No,
oh, that's
got his
even
ass,
worse.
He's got his ass lightly exploded.
That's
fine.
I would have rather died.
But the story was that 126 men withstood 2,000 Indians, but it was more like 12.
It was, yeah.
So Doc was at Port Madison at the time, but he kept appraised over on Bainbridge, appraised of the situation. More recent appraisal of the number of Indians attacked was closer to 30 than 2,000, at least according to this book. Doc with Mike Simmons and Lieutenant Drake wrote for Pat Cammon. Oh, wrote for Pat Cammon a letter to Mason. Basically, they get him paid off so the Snoqualmie wouldn't attack.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
So Stevens agreed to that. And not only that, Stevens offers Pat Cammon money to kill any hostile Indians for him, $80 a head.
Ooh.
So Pat Cannon just uses the heads of his slaves.
Yeah, he just kills whoever the fuck.
Yeah, and says, these are the chiefs trying to attack us.
Yeah, we also forgot to mention that some of the tribal people out here were still doing the slavery
thing. Okay, all
right. So there are a few people on the side of the Indians, but Doc was one of them. John Swan of Olympia was the only other, basically. So at Fort Kitsap, they had 2,300 Indians he was caring for, which was basically 20 times the size of any town on the Sound at the time. Meanwhile, Stevens stepped up the bribery system to get Indian to kill Indian, thus reduced their numbers that way.
Wow.
But Doc was trying the opposite of that. So Stevens...
Paying him to fuck?
Yeah.
Hey, you folks look happy. You want to have a baby? Here's forking $40. Like,
let me watch.
Yeah. One stipulation.
Oh, God.
You ever heard of OnlyFans?
Hey, that's what we call our fans.
Right.
Oh. What? Never mind. Stevens got into everybody, a fight with everybody at some point.
Oh, thank God. He got into everybody?
He even threw the Chief Justice of the Territory and Supreme Court for not hanging Leschi. But the doc avoided all this. Stevens had ordered Doc to send some of Chief Seattle's troops to join Pat Cammon to attack hostiles near the Snohomish River.
But they're not friends.
But Doc just delays. He says, oh, I got 100 men's for you. But
he said, I got 100 men's for you?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a quote?
Yep. But the hostiles knew that they were coming and would probably leave. But I'll send you this.
They're so hostile, they're just going to go away when we show up.
Well, I'll send you the names of these 100 guys. And he always...
Cool Guy, Big Dick McGee, Walker Texas Ranger, Mr. T, John Rambo.
Yep. And I started doing this too. You always just write, please advise at the end of every email or whatever. It's basically a polite way of saying fuck off.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Please advise.
No, you always end with send packs. Send packs.
What's send packs?
That's Custer's note to fucking Ben.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So Captain Lander marches up there, and of course they find no hostile Indians because there is none.
It's a lovely view.
Mm-hmm. Stevenson asked Doc to send more Seattle guys to sweep the country east to find hostiles. Go to Yakima.
Sweep the fucking country yourself. Fuck you.
Doc then writes back, Chief Seattle heard that there are troops guarding Seattle now. He wonders if they should be guarding Fort Kitsap too. Please advise. Steven said Pat Kenton was getting $80 a scalp. Doc said he was offering $100 for enemies that were out to kill him, but he got no takers because nobody was trying to kill him.
Right.
He's saying there's no hostile
He's being aliens. A whiny, made-up boogeyman. Yeah.
That letter that had the name of the 100 warriors never shows up. Got lost in the mail.
Right.
Dog
ate it.
Of course, Steven sends Captain Lander to Fort Kitsap to get it. He did get the letter with all the names, but at the very bottom, in fine print probably, it says, quote, we will fight whenever we have consent from our Indian agent, D.S. Maynard. So basically, he's just delaying.
Yeah.
So Stevens gets pissed. Then Stevens demanded that Doc produce the 100 guys, and Doc wrote back, quote, they seem willing to go, but I don't feel safe guaranteeing their safety. The whites would kill them thinking that they're hostiles.
Right? Oh, right, yeah.
So Governor Stephen tells his wife to sew special caps for the friendly Indians to wear.
What?
So they wouldn't
a fucking,
be shut.
They get like a baseball
They're
jersey?
Not getting like pussy caps, you know, the original like.
Oh, pussy hat, yeah.
Yeah.
But Doc outsmarts Stevens again and writes, quote, the men are hot to trot, but have no guns.
Wow.
They lost them all gambling.
With each other? Just like one guy with a stack of guns.
Pile of
like,
guns, yeah.
Hey, man, do you think you could get some of these?
Fuck off!
No, I won these.
He's got the
mine,
game.
Leave mine now.
It's the Game of Thrones throne, but made out of guns.
Like, yep.
Uh-huh.
So Stephen finally gives up. Doc had helped save all the friendly Indians from Stevens, but also saves his town, too. He even helped Mason go back to D.C. to get money to help out friendly Indians.
What, you mean like we avoided a giant weird war where there is actually no enemy that would have ravaged the countryside and
Wait
destroyed
a second.
All the economy?
I was flipping through this book, Doc Maynard by Bill Spiedel, the man who invented Seattle. I was flipping through and there's like there's just some maps, but then there's illustrations that look like they're out of the funny pages kind of. But there was one where it had like two native dudes with just like baseball hat caps on that said like Indians or something.
Everett Aqua Sox.
Seriously, I thought it was
Spokane Chiefs.
Thought there was some kind of baseball team.
Spokane Indians
might have been from what you were just talking about. Did they ever get the hats?
Oh, they should have.
I think the hats were red herring.
Hang on.
Of course, they changed to Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, there's like an illustration where they're actually wearing like weird baseball caps.
Seattle Indians.
Seattle Indians on it.
Dope.
I think right across the street, that was the name of the first PCL team.
At Sick Stadium?
Yep, right there. Then once Mr. Sick with the Rainier beer bought him, then became
Then all bets were off.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking.
Because all.
It's when the city
team,
really started, goddammit.
The whole team was drunk.
Hell yeah.
So for 4 months, he stays at Fort Kitsap and resigns his position when then goes back. But Chief Seattle wasn't all well-liked with the Duwamish because earlier, if you remember, he led an attack on them by putting that log over the river and then jumping out in the middle of the night and killing everybody.
Yeah, he did some straight-up cool-ass blocked ambush kind of shit.
Fuck yeah, dude.
So Duwamish Chief Curly didn't forget this, though.
Oh, I forgot about fucking Curly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Doc knew the situation. He put Curly and the Duwamish on Bainbridge to keep away from Chief Seattle. Well, I guess Chief Seattle's on the Kitsap Peninsula side. So basically, Chief Seattle was allied with Doc. Pat Cannon was more allied with Denny. And Curly was allied with Yesler.
Ugh.
You lose, dude. That sucks.
I mean, you're going to be well-funded if he decides to fund right. you.
But Curley also worked with the Hostiles, the Upper Duwamish, probably, selling them guns, but protected Yesler from their attacks anyway. Summer 1856, a new commander of the USSSS Massachusetts listened to Yesler and forwarded his side of the story to Stevens. Yesler was still probably butthurt that Doc took away his cheap labor and blamed Doc for moving them across the sound and causing them to revolt again. But Stevens already learned his lesson not to tangle with Doc because he would be outsmarted pretty easily.
Yeah.
All you get is a long letter and says, please advise at
please
the end.
Please advise, yeah.
So Arthur Denny gets credit for the University of Washington, UW, and he did give up the land for it, but he was a notorious tightwad. It was Doc at first that promised the land for a university, and he promised 30 acres at the top of the hill to Reverend Benjamin Close. The Methodist had already built the college in Salem, and Reverend Close had also married Doc and Catherine. But Denny was the big churchy guy.
Officiant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It took me like that split second of, what? Oh, wait. Yeah, yeah.
So Denny was the big churchy guy. He was made chairman of the Board of Trustees, and he was put in charge of legally acquiring that land that he would get for free, seeing that the conditions were fulfilled to make it legal, because Doc would usually have give him three months to build something, otherwise he'd take it back. But he gave the church 3 years to build a university, but Arthur Denny was too busy getting that prohibition bill passed, or trying to.
Fucking priorities, you know.
So he sits on the property, and then it goes back to Doc.
Wow, good, nice job.
I don't want anyone to drink.
Fuck well, educating
you,
the...
You lose your fucking lease on this land, then,
yeah,
dickhead.
Yeah, you lose a college
because
you're a douchebag.
So Doc didn't get along with these other pioneers, obviously, because he actually helped out the Indians and not kill them. And he also had the temerity to doctor to all classes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
In fact, that gave those syphilis pills to everybody.
We also cost him a lot of white customers because he would treat Indians in the same building.
Oh,
and
no.
And a lot of people was like, well, fuck that. I'm not going in that gross building where these other people have been treated. I'm going to stay home and spit tobacco into my wounds and
Jesus, the fucking
pray the herpes away.
Fucking, like, the racism in this country is so fucking weird. What is it? David Cross was, like, talking about, he's from Georgia, was talking about there's still, like, these old cemeteries from
Oh, yeah, the segregated
cemeteries.
Yeah, Edie's got one in her hometown, West Virginia.
Fuck, dude. Yeah, but he's like, bury me next to a black man, my desecrated, rotting, fucking worm-filled corpse next to a black man? Disgusting!
Yep.
Like, you're all going to be the same color after a while.
Yeah, no shit, man.
It'd be embarrassing, though, if they came back to zombies.
Oh, my God, racist zombies?
Mm. Brains. No, not no, those.
Not those brains.
Let's go to the back of the... No, never mind.
We're done here. Let's move on.
This is at the same time a minister could be fined $500 for marrying a 100% white person to anybody that was more than 25% a different color.
God damn it,
there
dude.
Was a like, racial purity fine. Is that what you just described?
But also, it's like, how do you fucking prove? How do you fucking prove that? Are they like paper?
You don't.
Are they papered like fucking purebred dogs
and
shit?
Well, let me get out my skull calipers and I'll tell you.
For sure. Oh, God damn it, dude.
Now, the way that your forehead slopes slightly away from...
They're lucky to do that. And, of course, the churchy guys, Denny, they also besmirched Catherine, too, because she moved to Fort Kitsap during the war and helped out the Indians. But the churchies, when they write their history books, Denny's later, they gave her the mention of planting the first dandelion... While all the other women planted roses.
Planting a fucking dandelion.
So they blamed dandelions on Catherine.
Oh, fuck off. Come in.
Esther wants to get in again.
Okay.
Lester.
Well, hello, Lester.
Sorry.
We're getting to the end here.
Planting fucking dandelions, my ass.
That's so, if one of you guys dies before me, I'm going to write in my memoir that one of you guys... invented a Scotch broom. It's gonna be in my fucking memoir.
That's already a thing.
It is.
I'll take credit for Leafy Spurge.
So when they get back from Fort Kitsap, Doc cancels the deal for the university there. That's April Fool's Day, 1856.
So should he fake Kate? Mm-hmm. Like cancel it?
So the elders of the church never let Denny forget about this debacle, So that's probably why he got pressured into giving up the land for the university. So when Reverend Bagley comes back 5 years later, he kind of leans on Denny to give up the land for the UW. And first, Denny tries to pawn off the cliff below Pike Place, where Chief Seattle's daughter lived forever. Yeah.
And where she haunts to this day.
Well, that's a great place for a university.
Yeah, no shit.
Well, I mean, I say that as a person that went to school not far from there.
Right there,
With your wife.
Yeah.
But yes, very wind-blasted and generally in the elements.
Yes. Yep. So Denny gave up 8 acres, Charlie Terry and Edward Lander gave up 10 acres each, so he doesn't even give up the bulk of the university there.
Oh, wow.
And of course, I think did we cover that? Mercer? Basically, Mercer gets to be the first president of the university.
Right, but he has to basically build it?
Well, he was the only guy building it there that had a college degree.
Yeah.
And that was the only requirement for the president of the university is to have a college degree.
I mean, he got a degree in welding or something.
Well, I mean, Doc would have, but he just had no interest.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. Well, this is a little bit later, too.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Mercer was famous for trying to get as many ladies into town.
Right. Yeah. Well,
it didn't quite work.
Denny wanted to get ladies, but they had to be pure, purity ball fucking Christian girls.
Oh, God.
But, come out here and hang out with these loggers and sailors. Like, see how you enjoy that shit, fucking.
But there are plenty of ladies. They just happen to be native.
Yeah. Oh, well, you can't have that, Will.
Mm-hmm.
Well, especially you're going to have to pay a tax to, have babies.
Oh, right. Yeah,
$500 fine if you're
tax.
So after the war was settled, Doc sold lots of lots, one for the highest price of $130.
Holy fuck.
He sold a lot. Oh, this is probably what you're talking about. For $20 to Wyckoff.
Yes, because, Wyckoff, Doc wanted a, you know what this city really needs is a blacksmith because we don't fucking have one. Everything's made out of wood. I'm sick of using wood nails to try to nail
I'm sure,
wood together.
I'm sure watching fucking San Francisco burn down for the 90th time, they're like, our turn's coming, dummy.
Sick of having cedar shoes on my horse and fucking, dug fir hinges on my door and all that kind of shit. And their jail cells made out of fucking pine. So, tell you what, I'm going to try my hand at blacksmithing. So he goes on ye olde Amazon and fucking orders a blacksmithing kit, the forge and
then
thing.
He goes on YouTube and learns how to...
He doesn't even bother doing that. He just starts kind of clonking on shit, put metal in the fire and I bang it with a hammer.
Burn the metal.
And, and Wyckoff, shows up and is like, what in the blue fuck do you think you're exactly doing? He's like, you think you can do better? He's like, yeah, because I'm a fucking blacksmith. He's like, oh, dope. And so he sells him the whole setup for less than he paid for it.
Sure.
He didn't care. He just wanted a blacksmith.
Yeah, as long as there's a blacksmith.
He was like, you know what? I'm going to become the best blacksmith. He's like, no, we need a blacksmith.
Anybody want to do it? No? Cool. I'm going to do it then.
But Wyckoff must have been taking a shit or something. Oh, wait. I'm a blacksmith,
Yeah.
And so Doc sells him the building and the gear, and then we had a blacksmith.
Yeah. Well, it's not just for horseshoes. It's Yesler's mill breaks down, you'd have to go to San Francisco
get parts made.
Yeah.
So basically that's why.
It's not just fucking horseshoes.
Yeah.
It's
that's
literally
why Denny
everything.
Makes, yeah. Why Denny makes fun of for Doc for giving away such free shit, but you wouldn't have a town without all.
Yeah,
you didn't profit to the maximum. It's and you wouldn't have that stupid fucking axe that you apparently still can't build your fucking roof on your house with.
I think that's his brother.
I know it was,
but anyway.
Fuck him.
Doc also gave Dexter Horton, the guy who got a shell up his ass, a start. He saw that he was smart and saved money, and he hires him to cook for his crew.
I don't have to wipe anymore. It kind of just falls out.
But later convinces Horton to start his own store and gave him a cheap lot for $100. And then 14 years later, Dexter opens the first bank in Seattle. After the battle, the Doc disappears off record for 6 months because he quits as Indian art agent.
He's out John Wicking around.
But now with the army coming in, stumps were cleared and downtown resurveyed. Of the 50 buildings that were in town at the time, 45 were on his plat. So Charlie Terry had given up on Alki and started developing downtown lots, too. And he gets a chunk from Boren. Doc was getting to retirement age, though. But he saw a need in the community because his lawyer had drowned going to Vashon. So he becomes a lawyer.
What do they call that? A good start? Ha!
Oh, hey!
So while everybody's out trying to kill Indians, Doc gets busy, and he stops Denny's attempt to make King County dry. Just imagine that. And Doc wants it wet, And with the other wet man, Timothy Hinckley, he got the legislature to carve off a new county.
No, sir, I don't like it.
So, yep. Sounds like a movie title.
The Wet Man.
Doc wants it wet.
Oh. Oh. I was just going with The Wet Man. Don't like that.
Starring Chlamydia Chowder.
So he gets to go ahead to make a new county, one wet and one dry, and then once they get
loaded
of that.
Oh, so we're going to do the Kansas fucking the Missouri thing only with booze?
So that gets shot down again because they don't want two counties. By 1857, there were mills in Seabeck, Port Gamble, Port Madison, Port Orchard.
All them ports.
And all had company stores for the standard stuff that you need, clothes, food, etc. But now, since there were actual ladies in town, they had to go to Seattle to shop for better clothes.
Yes. Oh.
In kids' clothes. So gradually Seattle becomes the center of commerce.
I just thought back in that day, kids just were, you're just naked until you're like, I don't know, old enough to have shame.
You get issued your set of clothes and you wear them throughout your life.
Yeah, right.
So you gotta like hem them, you know, let the, kind of like little rascaling it. Like,
yeah. Oh, I see. You start out.
You're wearing an adult set of clothes.
Adult clothes, but they're hemmed.
Yeah.
And you redo the hem,
you
know, every
birthday you have an unhemming fucking.
So Charlie Terry was the only other pioneer that actually had a sense of humor, and he didn't like Denny or Denny's claim that Doc stole it before even Doc got there. He changed his town from New York to Elkhi when he saw Doc had success in naming Seattle, but Charlie admired Doc and copied him. But Charlie dies early in 1867 at age 37, so Terry didn't stick at Elkhi because of the lack of protection from the wind.
No, I was going to say, because you constantly getting just blasted from the north, mm-hmm. like
especially if it's cold,
yeah,
which it is most of the year.
Mm-hmm. And Renton actually had his mill there for a little while, and then moves it over to Port Orchard.
While Renton moved it to Port Orchard,
yep, makes sense.
Yeah,
I think I found out too that Port Orchard, it's not named after any orchard; it's actually named after a guy.
I would assume I haven't seen any fruit trees, or any remnants.
Yeah, it was a guy
thereof.
First name Sydney, but then across the water at like Charleston, they named that Sydney. So it's like,
but Sydney was in a punk band, and his stage name was Orchard,
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason.
Sure,
hard ass fucking punk name.
Orchard Vicious,
Angry Orchard,
Angry Orchard.
So eventually, Doc and Terry, they swap lots.
Sounds dirtier than it is.
So basically, downtown for West Seattle. So 260 acres of Downtownish for 320 acres of West Seattle.
Is that the local tribe name, the Downtownish? Mm-hmm. They're up there with the Duwamish, the Suquamish.
So people think Doc's a drunk idiot again for trading this, but the ones...
I'm drunk like a fox.
Well, he's playing like 4D chess or whatever.
That was the other thing, Denny, too, is like, oh, Doc's drunk all the time. He's like, no, Doc's just a normal guy.
Yeah, he's the douchebag that everybody's drunk. Not me, though, because baby Jesus.
So Terry gets the stuff that was kind of outside of Pioneer Square, which was mostly all the stuff south that's underwater most of the time, from Dearborn to Holgate.
Oh, all that! I used to live in that warehouse down there.
Oh, yeah.
By that McDonald's Meats.
That's right.
So basically from the water to 13th Ave, basically half was underwater at high tide, and the other half was the side of Beacon Hill. But Terry bought that land from, Terry gets that because of an onion farm, which is the money-making operation at the time, because they were selling for $4 a pound.
God damn.
Well, you got to flavor your salmon and deer meat with something.
$4 a pound, though?
Yeah, that's...
I would not buy an onion if it was $4 a pound now. Mm-hmm. And that's in today money, $4.
Yeah, I fucking hunt them down myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hunt them in the wild.
So Doc also gets a $5,000 mansion at Elkhi. And since he and Catherine got there super early, they got the 640 acres for free.
One more time, you said how much mansion?
$5,000.
$5,000 mansion?
Mm-hmm.
We call that a mobile home?
A van.
Like a shed?
Yeah. My $5,000 mobile mansion.
And they only sell 320 acres, or basically half of it, and they get $3,000 for this land. Only 7 months after the Battle of Seattle, no one was moving in, and real estate values were nil. Though now everything's worth millions of dollars. Charlie Terry didn't reap the rewards either. So when Terry died and the property was probated in 1875, it was only worth $18,000. So basically, right. He overpays it. And
damn.
He wants 10 years or 15 years in. Also, 1858 was the Fraser River Gold Rush, the Caribou.
Oh, yeah.
The town emptied out, but Doc was old and wise enough not to go because he already been there and done that, and he wanted to mine the miners.
Right.
That's how you do it.
Hey, you want a shovel? I'll trade you a $4 onion for a 50-cent shovel.
Chicken barge.
Yep. And, of course, Vancouver, B.C. wasn't there at the time. So basically, people had to stop here. And the same with the 1864 strike in Boise. I guess Boise has like a music festival. It's called like Tree Fort. I'm like, because Boise used to be Fort Boise. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's Boise translates to Tree Fort.
That makes sense.
So now
it's where you put your Playboy porno books and cigars.
Yeah.
He walks up to the bartender. He says, "Bartender, give me a Tree Fort." Bartender looks at him and says, "Well, what's in a Tree Fort?" Clown says, "Playboy books and cigars."
And actually, there was a little strike on the Sultan and the Skagit in 1878. And then 1898, we get the Klondike.
Fucking baking goggles, baby.
Mm-hmm. And it was Denny who screwed up the angle of the streets because it was illegal per the Homesteader Act that all streets had to be north and south and east and west.
Denny, if you're going to start a time. Clearly couldn't goddamn tell directions if you've ever been to Seattle. Mm-hmm. So.
And by 1858, he hadn't even sold a claim off his land yet. Denny said, quote, "Doc was monarch of all he surveyed, but actually of mine and Bourne's too."
I mean, fuck you. You sound bitter. Mm-hmm. You sound like a bitter little man that doesn't want anybody
That's
to
why
drink.
He takes credit for it after.
Go fuck yourself, Denny.
After Doc dies, he takes all the credit.
Moon's over my hammy can suck it, Denny. Mm-hmm. IHOP over Denny.
That's
fuck
right.
You.
IHOP every day.
So 25 years after Doc gets here, the first directory of businesses was published by the PI.
So the yellow fucking pages are showing
yep.
up?
So they had 208 businesses, not including the 50 sex working houses.
Oh, I was going to say, those probably don't show up in
those
the directory.
Those are unlisted, yeah. They stick those under your windshield wiper.
Off-menu
right.
items.
Post them to the, they flyer them. You have the staple hammer out.
So of the 208 businesses, 196 were in Doc's Plat, Pioneer Square, basically.
Yeah, might be why. Is there still the Doc Maynard's bar down there?
I believe so.
I haven't been to Pioneer Square in a grip.
I haven't walked around down there in a long time, but I assume that it's one of those things that they're not going to get rid of.
Well, we're going to take acid and look for ghosts at all these places, too.
Hell yeah.
I mean, the night's still young, man. Fucking.
So Doc dies March 13th, 1873. 2 days later, all the shops in town were closed for the funeral. 15 years later, Denny writes his book on the history of Seattle and writes Doc out of it.
Yep, because he's a fucking miserable little fucking douche.
Mm-hmm. And tells everybody he was a drunk asshole. Yep.
Well, it's because everybody liked Doc more than they liked fucking Denny. Denny's like,
I don't know why people don't like me. I'm such a puritanical asshole that fucking tries to be judgmental to everyone and treat the natives like shit.
And try to pass laws to force everyone to be like me.
I demand respect, yeah.
Fuck you, dude.
So we should be called Maynardtown.
Maynardtown.
Docton. I don't know. I don't like Maynard. Maynardtown doesn't roll off the tongue.
Also, Maynard's I don't know. It's not... Without the Maynard James Keenan thing, it was something my old man... I was raised with my grandfather, and when I was a kid, I would be eating like oatmeal or something, and he would say, "That's good stuff, Maynard."
That was the commercial.
What is that from?
That was from commercials back
in
the day.
Oh, okay. I had no idea what it was from, but
around the Mikey likes it fucking life cereal. Like,
he likes it. Mikey likes it.
No, that was Quaker Oats had Maynard.
Oh, that's why. Okay. But where did that come from?
Ad agency.
Was there someone named Maynard that they... Okay. It's like the Vern thing.
I remember the phrase, I don't actually... remember the visuals of the commercials. I do know I'm old enough where they were still on TV.
You know what? This is what we're going to do. One of us is going to research this shit, and it's going to show up on How Your Food Was Junked.
Probably.
The other podcast.
Or it'll just show up on the Instagram, or Will just find a fucking gif of it and blast it at us while we're trying
text it to everyone in his fucking phone.
Slowly wearing you guys down with them.
Well, it's disturbing how fast you come up with those things.
Yes.
It's like, I think he has a fucking board set up deploy.
There used
to
be a Giphy keyboard where you could type something and it would be it'd give you nine terrible options and you pick one of them or whatever to post another thing.
But it's
all terrible.
Before I can even respond to the first one, he's always got two or three more.
Right.
Generally Donald Trump eating a pizza backwards fucking.
Yeah, that was not fun.
I don't want to see that thing feed itself. And also, you know that's not the way it does it normally.
No.
There's a degree more feathers and blood happening when it decides to
unhinges its jaw.
Right.
Arise, chicken, right. Arise.
Oh, BillyWitchDoctor.com.
One convenient location on moon.
Ah, see, it's weird that we both are having Aqua Teen Hunger Force shit, because today my thing was idle hands spend time at the genitals, and you know how much God hates that. From Drippy the Mold Monster.
Oh, right, yeah. Fucking hell.
So that actually sounds like a quote from fucking Arthur Denny, so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, fuck you, Arthur Denny.
Yeah. See, Doc Maynard, he would encourage you to have your hands spend some time at your genitals.
That's right.
It's a free fucking country.
Renamed Denny Way, Maynard Way.
Yeah, Maynard Way.
We're going to do this the Maynard Way.
That sounds right.
We could do this the easy way or the Maynard way.
Ooh, easy, please. Easy way. Easy way. Does that mean a bullet right behind the ear real quick? Sure, but not necessarily the Maynard way.
All right, I'm being attacked by a cat. Lester, we got to get the fuck out of here.
Lester, you went from loving to clawing.
Yeah, he's lovingly clawing my fucking leg because he wants to get in my lap. We are going to the company party down in C. Basically, the bar that I work at is having a company party for all the other bars in the neighborhood. And nice. So all the bars are closed except for the 9-Pound Hammer, and then we're all going to hang out at my bar.
The bars are closed up.
Yeah, and I get a plus one, and it's my dear wife, and she's been stressed out, so I'm going to go show her a good time. And nice. Then we had childcare, and then it fell through, and then we got childcare again right at the last minute. So
well, the childcare giveth and the child care taketh away.
It sure do.
I'm going to go eat some fucking mozzarella sticks and drink a little bit of White Claw and some vodka and then get a good night's sleep and go to work.
Well, tell them all hello for me.
I shall.
All the White Claws and the mozzarella sticks.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Will's going to
drive all the way home and then wake up very fucking early. Like the mailman do.
I think at this point I get up earlier than Will sometimes.
Yeah. I go to bed when you guys are waking up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you'll be, like, sending fucking texts that, like, just the phone going, will, like, wake me up at 4 in the fucking morning. Hey, guys, I got done editing, and then I watched a thing. It's like, great, Tony. I'm glad to hear it.
Oh, dude, yeah, that movie, The Creator, fucking
yeah, I almost,
excellent.
I almost fucking watched it the other day.
It's fucking excellent. Okay. It just came out. What did I watch it on? Hulu. It's fucking rad. And it's the director is the guy that did...
Yeah, you were saying...
the really good Star Wars thing.
Rogue One.
Yeah, the guy that did Rogue One. And he didn't even start out being a director. He was a...
Best boy? Key grip?
No, he's a VFX guy.
Oh, okay.
And then... Which is why, like, the VFX and all his movies look fucking rad. Because, like, he knows how to do all that shit, so he knows what to shoot. But really, really fucking cool. The creator is really cool.
Cool.
I've been watching Black Scorpion.
Don't know that one.
It's a... 2001, straight to syndicated TV show.
Oh, perfect.
From Roger Corman.
Oh, what?
There you go.
And I don't
look up the picture of this lady. It's like a superhero, and it's trying to be campy like the first Batman, the 60s Batman, but it's painfully unfunny.
Okay.
It's right up your alley.
But sounds like... I'm just going to arbitrarily be like that show's biggest fan, which means the only fan.
Right.
And just talk nonstop about it, even though it's rather,
I'm gonna have to watch it.
Shitty.
I'm gonna have to watch it so that I can.
Could be much worse, but it's still pretty.
You could bounce your fucking stories off of me.
But the lady's head mask thing kind of makes her look like a sexy California raisin.
Oh, okay.
Now I'm very intrigued.
Thought Greta the Gremlin was fucking getting there. Which,
yeah. She's still looking good up there on the shelf.
Yep.
About to karate chop the fucking DeLorean time machine.
Well, I didn't, like, Wild West Extra is like, oh, Greta.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that's a weird one, but sure, do you, boo.
Anyways, we'll come back next week with something completely different.
Yeah.
But until then, we're going to go out in the hail.
It's going to be so fucking different.
Oh,
like,
cool.
It won't be as much fun.
Should we tease it as a beloved fail son?
Yeah, it's definitely a fail son.
Fail son.
I shitting one's pants in protest. That's always a thing you should do. All right, let's go.
But until then, we're going to go out in a hail
of
Maynard fire.
Right.
That's good stuff.
Hey, what happened to your cereal?
Big Bear took it.
Oh, lucky bear, because that was Malto meal. It was smooth and creamy wheat, toasted malt, iron fortified. Good stuff, Maynard.
Can I have some?
Sure. But why don't you show me that bear first?
Are you sure you want to see it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
More Malt-O-Meal, please.
Maynard, close the door.
Malt-O-Meal hot cereal, a nice part of a nutritious...
Fuck you, Miles City.
I want you to know it's over.
Well.